History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And we've learned they don't have to go untold if we'll just take the initiative to ask a few questions and maybe more importantly, to patiently listen. You never know what you might hear. Of course, we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn so much. But not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, we really are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This weekend, of course, we mark Memorial Day, a day set aside in our country to remember the more than 1 million men and women since the founding of our republic to pay the ultimate price for our freedom. In World War II alone, that number was more than 406,000. And for many of the families of those Gold Star heroes, questions still linger 75 years later. But that doesn't necessarily mean that those questions need to remain unresolved. If you heard our most recent episode with Navy veteran Vic Walters, you heard about the mission that has haunted him for more than 75 years when he witnessed a PB-4Y2 privateer, which had been damaged by Japanese fire, crash into the ocean upside down. His memories of that mission over Singapore on June 1, 1945, have helped propel the quest of one Gold Star family and, in turn, 11 others. Buren O'Kane was a 19-year-old fresh out of East Bakersfield High School in Bakersfield, California, when he made his final flight that day. Jeff O'Kane is his great-nephew, the grandson of Buren's younger brother, and he's going to help us understand what this journey has been like for his family. Jeff, where did this all begin for you?
I don't even know when it started. We'd always, heard about it, and it was spoke of often. My grandfather and my father and my whole family always discussed Buren, and it was just known in my family. But I couldn't tell you exactly what age it started. But it's a family legend talking about the life of Buren O'Kane and the regrets of, him not coming back. And that's kind of what started my dad's mission in 1997 to find out everything, to find out the story from the men that were there that day. My dad was able to accomplish that in 2002 when he actually met Victor Walters and started this whole thing.
I want to follow it along your path because you spent so much time now researching it, following your dad's footsteps on that. What did you know? What did your family know about him? What had happened to him? Can you give us a picture of what you actually knew, and then we'll fill in the blanks of what you've been able to find out since?
We knew he was on a crew with Lieutenant Commander Mears, Howard F. Mears, 12 men aboard PB-4Y2. We know that they were shot down on a photo recon flight over Singapore, two planes. His plane had gone down, the crash was witnessed, all believed dead. That's about all we knew about it. We've got some letters that came from the Navy, the commander of the squadron wrote several letters to my great-grandmother and great-grandfather, giving what information he could, and even following up after the war to give them some more information, but still not everything. And that's the desire my grandfather always had, to know what happened that day from the guys that were there.
And did you have a sense growing up as to how this had affected your great-grandparents, your grandfather, the rest of the family, how they had experienced it and processed it and reacted to it?
Yeah, my grandmother, Faye Houseman, she had grown up across the street. She was born on the same street as the O'Kanes and grew up with the O'Kane family. My grandmother is still alive today at 89 years old, and she is the keeper of the story. And she lived with my great-grandparents when my grandfather went in the Navy. And she tells the story of how it affected my great-grandmother, where they had the news, 75 days at the end of the war that the plane had gone down. And, still holding on to hope that maybe they would find him in a camp. And so they watched the releases of the names, hoping to see his name on there. And down to where they went through the last camp, and his name wasn't on there. He was never found. And that she continued to hope that her son would come home.
Mm. So your understanding of this was, you know, we've got this information from the government. He died in action. Was there ever a thought of, hey, maybe we can find something more out? Or where did that come from?
Well, it started with my dad going into the story. He got, in 1997, was actually sent to the Philippines, which is where their story, where they took off from the mission. Port-au-Prince Airfield, Palawan, Philippines, is where they took off from to fly to Singapore. So working there, my dad was able to research and found the graveyard that they have for the American soldiers in Manila. And at the time, the only place in the world where his name existed, mm-hmm. on the walls of the missing, mm-hmm. in a foreign country. And I continued on 2 years later, was actually sent to Singapore on a job where he was able to research the library archives. And actually found the newspaper reports, Japanese-controlled Singapore, and the story of them shooting down the plane. And they also claimed they shot down Victor Walter's plane, flown by Lieutenant Junior Grade Heiler, and which Victor thought was pretty funny. He'd heard that before.
Well, I guess I should ask you, too. What do you know about Buren before this happened?
I have stories from my grandmother. We have his letters that we sent in, not a whole bunch, just different things that had gone on in his life. One of my grandfather's longtime friends, Robert Renfro, I actually deer hunted with him for years, but I never knew the story to the extent that I know now. He passed on quite a few years ago, but I sure wish he was here to talk about this, because I think mm-hmm. he would love this. That what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish. Buren was 19 years old the day he died. He joined right after he graduated high school. My grandmother's brother, Robert Renfro, they all went down to the Navy. His older brother, Clyde, had already joined, and they all went down. But he didn't get to join the Navy until December, because he didn't turn 18 until December, and it sounds like my great-grandmother wasn't very willing to sign him over.
So your father decides he's going to try to find some more information.
Well, he got sent on a job there. He figured he might as well do it while he was there.
So if he hadn't been sent to the Philippines for work, maybe this whole journey wouldn't have started?
Yeah, more than likely. I wouldn't have had anywhere to go and run with this. He had done so much, and it was just so amazing what he was able to find. It's always been a very big story in my family that has continued on.
If you can, give me a sense for some of the things he was able to find, and it kind of sounds like every answer created two or three more questions.
Oh, yeah. We don't ever run out of questions. It is just a pit of questions. But, yeah, he went to the Philippines, got further into the story, and then going to Singapore, and then, finding the newspaper article, and then the search for the gunners aboard the other plane. There were 13 men aboard, and my dad, after 97, 99, started looking on the Internet to see if he could find one of those men. And he was able to find Mr. Victor Walters from San Diego in 2002. And he was able to finally share the firsthand story verified by the 7 remaining crew members of what happened that day. Not some dry, story, but, the guys that were there, the feelings that they had, it was very amazing. And my grandfather got to hear that. My father got to share that with his father. And like you said, the more questions came up. He had 5 pictures of the recon camera of my uncle's plane going down that day, which was amazing for my family to see. 67 years after the plane went down, we have pictures of their final moments. And that was pretty amazing.
And before that, you guys didn't know those pictures existed?
No, sir.
What was that moment like to realize that and to actually look and say, he was in that plane right there?
It was very neat. I was young. I was in my early 20s. I was, I don't understand. I didn't understand it then like I do now. I thought it was amazing what my dad did, but I don't know. Maybe it just didn't hit me. I was too busy working and chasing girls.
So those pictures, what kind of information were you guys able to glean, and what kind of hunt did that set you off on?
Well, it was the end of the story. Mm-hmm. We finally knew the firsthand account from the guys that were there. The things that had happened, the scares that they had. Victor Walters spoke about his gun sight going out while he was shooting at one of the KA-43 Oscars, and how he had scrambled to get his manual sight up, and he was so afraid, and then he looked up and the plane was gone. So he had got enough rounds close enough to it that they decided to go somewhere else. And just some of the fears that, you know, they had. It was just neat to find the personal story where one point Victor Walters had stated that when they started firing and you know, their gunners are all firing and the planes are making multiple runs on them. And he just said, I wish I was somewhere else. And then going on into, he was the port waist gunner, and my uncle's plane went down on the port side. So he was the first one to see it. And he reported over the intercom back to the pilot that the privateer is down. And then the pilot, Lieutenant Heiler, asked him, are there any survivors? And then Victor Walters gets to explain what kind of hell that question was for him. Because his first reaction is, how in the hell do I know? But his next worry was, if he told him, I don't know, that he knew Lieutenant Heiler would turn that plane on its wing and go back and check. And it might have gotten them all killed.
Mm-hmm.
And he just quickly calculated that nobody survives, an upside-down water hit nose first, and he told him, no, sir, no survivors. But you can tell that the question and the answer weighed on him.
Yeah, and that was clear even in my conversation with him.
Yeah.
And just one of the things I hear a lot from folks who listen, you know, to the veterans who share their stories here is, you know, my dad never talked about it. Hearing so-and-so talk about what he did makes me imagine or have an idea of what my dad went through that he never told me about. Was there an element of that for you, that in hearing Mr. Walters' story, what it was like to fly those missions, what he saw that day, that gave you a glimpse into maybe what Buren's life as a Navy aviator might have been like?
Yeah, it was amazing to see their feelings and what went on and you know, some of the stories that happened during the firefight. They stayed and protected my uncle's plane for 35 minutes, trying to protect them into a water landing in enemy territory when they could have just flown away. Their mission was complete. They had the pictures. Nobody would have thought badly of them if they just came back to base. The other plane's going down. And that's one of the things I love about the story, is that Lieutenant Heiler and his crew did not leave them. They stayed with them all the way down from 10,000 feet to 1,000 feet and covered that plane. They didn't have to, but they did. And they put themselves in great peril to do so. It's just nice to know that, you know, they didn't go at this alone. They were in dire straits, but they had Lieutenant Heiler and crew on their wing all the way down until the moment that they crashed.
And those are details you didn't know until you talked to Walters?
Oh, yeah. He has a dope sheet that he supplied that has a brief story, and then his firsthand account of, you know, the things that went on. And they had a top gunner running out of ammunition, and he called out that he was running out. I believe the gunner was O'Rourke, and he was doing the front top gunner. He was doing a lot of the firing, and he called out that he was running out of ammunition, and it was a big scare for him because he was the guy shooting the most. Mm-hmm. And they had someone run down and get more ammunition and take it up to him. And he had a dual 50s set up, and it's actually mentioned in the report filed by his pilot that instead of taking both the guns down to reload, he just started reloading one while he continued to fire with the other one and then switched once he got one reloaded. And he actually credits the gunners as being one of the main reasons why they got out of there.
I guess. I mean, that sounds pretty intense. So was there anything else that you guys found out at the time that was of value or added to your understanding?
One of the men from VPB 111 after the war, they actually gave us a map that was drawn by a Japanese pilot. They couldn't remember which one went to Japan several years after the war, met with some pilots. One of the pilots claimed that he engaged him that day in Singapore. And the way they vetted him was they slid a map of Singapore to him with a pen. And he drew out the whole engagement. They knew he was definitely one of the pilots that was there. They don't believe he's the pilot that shot my uncle's plane down. They report 13 to 18 fighters after him that day. But he was definitely one of the ones that engaged. It's how they vetted him. And so that was about it. We had the full story. We had the five pictures. And it's just kind of, the mission was complete. We'd known everything there was to know, and everybody was satisfied until I dredged all this up in 2018.
Yeah, so what changed? What sparked that?
I just started digging into this again, looking through the internet. I kept finding pictures. Other people have pictures of my uncle's plane going down. And they're really good pictures. They're very clear. And so I started contacting people to see where they got them from. And most of the people tracked back to VPB 106 Squadron. They were squadron mates. They had copies of the pictures that had been uploaded to the internet. There was a guy that was stationed in Guam that had come across the pictures, scanned them, and put them up on the internet trying to find the story. He ran his own story on my uncle's crew, his own personal mission to find out what happened to this plane. And actually, one of the guys from VPB 111, Robert Wolport, actually wrote in his book about this mission and quite a few other missions that he was on. And he actually saw it and reported the whole, excerpt from his book of what happened that day to that flight.
Is this something that would pop back into your head occasionally? Like, I wonder if there's anything else we can find?
Yeah, and that was my goal, just to see if there was anything more that we could discover. I saw an advertisement for Project Recover, and I sent some stuff to them, and they started to dig into this. We had the Japanese map. It actually shows where the Japanese pilot says the plane crashed, and Project Recover started running that down while I continued to contact people on the internet. They worked out that from the Japanese fighter's map, that X where the privateer crashed is actually under their harbor expansion that went in a couple of years ago. So our mission started and stopped immediately. And a couple of days later, talking with the VP Navy webmaster, Nevins Frankel, he actually asked me, have you ever read the 38-page declassified report of your uncle's mission? To which I replied, no. And so he sent it to me. And that was the day we discovered that there were actually 29 photos of my uncle's plane going down and maps drawn by the navigator, longitude and latitude reported. Going through those 29 photos, there were two pictures of my uncle's plane striking the water. And I just remember looking at the picture just going, wow. I mean, that is the exact moment that all 12 men died. Just kind of mulled that over for a minute, and then I saw it. I saw the island in the background of my uncle's plane striking the water. And then the quest began, can I find that island? And the answer is yes, I can.
But that may not mean what you think it means. It's time for our first break, but there's much more to come on this Memorial Day edition of Hometown Heroes. What did Jeff O'Kane have to do to find that island? And what is he hoping is going to come next? Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook for photos and a video with Jeff detailing some of the steps along his family's journey of discovery. And Hometown Heroes will come right back after this. If you're a business owner, I've got a phone number you really ought to take down, 800-989-1139. And when I say business owner, I mean businesses of all shapes and sizes, from the multinational chain to the hot dog stand on the corner, or my personal preference, the taco truck, 800-989-1139. Because you can have the greatest product or service in the world, the best business plan, the most capable workforce, and still not maximize your potential if you don't have a reliable, efficient, and versatile plan for processing payments. 800-989-1139. That's the number for my friends at Provident Payments, one of the fastest growing payment consultants in the country. Why is Provident growing so fast? Because they're committed to helping your business grow. 800-989-1139. That nonprofit you love that relies on donations? Provident can even connect you to a special software platform to streamline and stimulate giving. If you are ready to grow, give it a go. Go Provident today at providentpayments.com or call that number, 800-989-1139.
proudly presented by Provident Payments. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Memorial Day edition of the program. Memorial Day stirs such powerful emotions for so many of us as it is observed in every corner of our country this week. On the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find a video produced in my little corner of California and airing on multiple TV stations this week, capturing what makes Memorial Day significant to so many. I was asked to share some of my thoughts and reflected on the inspiration behind all the interviews I've been privileged to engage in with veterans for the last decade and a half. If my grandfather, a decorated doctor in World War II, had become one of those Gold Star heroes and he came close, I would not be here. And his inspiration for serving in World War II was a Gold Star hero, his uncle, Vincent Dushek, one of the first American aviators killed while serving in World War I. This week, we're learning about a naval aviator who never came home from World War II. Buren O'Kane was just 19 when he and the other 11 men aboard their reconnaissance plane went into the water on June 1, 1945. For decades, the details surrounding his death remained a mystery to his family, but his great-nephew, Jeff O'Kane, has been telling us how that picture started to come together, and when we left off, he said he believed he could find the area where that plane went down, based on an island visible in a photo that for decades his family had never seen. So, Jeff, you sounded pretty confident when you said that island could be found, and indeed you have pinpointed it. So how'd you do that?
You get on computers and use Google Earth. We have so many advancements now that we just started going through the reports, pulling out every bit of information, multiple reports, trying to get everything together, everything that was reported, and then trying to use Google Earth to put that together and see if we could find where that was at.
When you started, and maybe even when your dad started his quest on this, was there any thought, was anyone saying or thinking, hey, maybe his body could be recovered all these years later?
No, it wasn't really. I mean, we always hoped. You always hope that they can come home. But it was just such a big thing to, how do you find a plane in the ocean? And then once we discovered the pictures and we could put the information together, and then once we got more people to look at it, we've been able to actually reduce it down to about a 4-acre water search. And that is very small in the ocean. And then our wildest dream became a reality. I can't guarantee that it's there. I can just show where it crashed 75 years ago. But I think that crew has earned the right to have someone come look for them.
And so people are hearing this and they're saying, okay, well, you had a picture showing the plane go in, the island's in the background, so you can figure that out. You found the island on Google Earth. It's just a matter of doing the math and drawing the line. And like you said, 4-acre search. Okay, let's go get that plane. Let's go get those guys out of there. Not that simple, is it?
No, sir, it's not.
Did you know that at the time?
No, I had this naive idea that somebody would run right out there and go get them. They're U.S. soldiers. But the 3 years that I've put into that has taught me that it is not that easy. It's in a country that currently will not allow the U.S. government to reclaim our soldiers from World War II. I think it's approximately 1,900 war dead in Indonesia. They're in Indonesian waters. DPA has been working with Indonesia, and there's some current breakthroughs, but we're still a long way from getting to where we need to be.
And I know you don't work for the government. You're not the Indonesian government spokesperson. But for folks who are wondering, well, why not? What's your understanding of why Indonesia won't allow U.S. to go in and retrieve those remains?
I don't know. I know they're very protective of their cultural things over there, and they're very cautious about allowing foreigners into their country. The defense minister from Indonesia, as I've been told by DPAA, came over and met with, Mark Esper, Department of Defense, and they spoke to him about this, reports of movement with Indonesia. He assigned their counterpart, essentially the Indonesian Department of Defense, and that they plan to move this forward. And DPA believes that they may possibly be able to get a signed agreement with Indonesia within the next few months, which is awesome. But it's not for our area. It's for another area. Their current goal is to get in, try to work with the Indonesians, show them what they're about, show them that they are there to recover U.S. soldiers and nothing else. Once I get a working relationship with the Indonesians, they plan to request to be able to go into the area that my uncle's plane is in. And hopefully all the other places, too.
Yeah.
If I could find a way to get them all to come home, that would be great. I'm trying to concentrate on 12 right now. And it is a very, very large mission, especially for me. But I'm going to find a way to get it done. Because there's no way I can stop doing this.
Well, apparently not, because I have a feeling that over the last 3 years, you've probably run into a lot of roadblocks and a lot of stop signs.
Uh-huh. I'm an O'Kane. I find a way to go under, over, around, or through.
Can you give us an example of some of the things that were said to you that may have caused someone else to stop or give up, or that the answer was indicating you should stop or give up?
No. We have some people that kind of tell us how, hopeless this is. But if you watch some of the things that have been going on, like with Project Recover or Pacific Rex, these guys have been going out. These are nonprofit groups. And they've been locating planes from World War II and reporting the locations of the U.S. government. They have been recovering the remains of soldiers. PBS, Nova, the last B-24, came out in, I believe, November of 2018. It showcases DPAA diving on a plane in Croatian waters that went down 76 years prior with three men aboard. Mm-hmm. And they recovered the remains of one of them. That was, I think, 5 months after we started this. It brought a lot of hope. They showed me it could be done. And I won't accept any other answer than that they're going to get this done. And they've been really receptive with us. I've met with Kelly McCaig of DPAA, the director. I've met with him multiple times. We've made a lot of effort to make sure that they hear us. We write a lot of letters. We talk to congressmen. I've gotten a hold of the U.S. Indonesian ambassador and to make sure that they keep hearing us. They've reported they hear us. They are just trying to move this forward, and they will do it as soon as possible. I'm just no Kane. We're not very patient. 75 years has been enough. How do I go back to my grandmother and tell her to be patient? I can't. She has been. One of my main goals is to finish this, for my father and my grandmother to see this plane, if they can find it. To bring the remains home is a very, very long shot. But if you're going to dream, dream big.
So what are you doing now?
Waiting. Patiently. Trying to wait. Mm-hmm. Hoping they can get the agreement. I hope they can get in there and show the Indonesian government that what their mission is and what their goal is and to return these soldiers. I pray that the Indonesian government will be receptive and allow them to finish this mission.
Can you put into words what you think it would mean to your family if the plane were found?
Yeah, that would be a very big day. It would mean a lot, not just to my family. I mean, I've spoken with 8 of the other 11 families of lost soldiers on this plane. I've spoken with the daughter of Lieutenant Commander Mears. I think it would mean a lot to a lot of people. I know it would mean a lot to me.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure you believe that day is going to come. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been doing all this.
Oh, yeah. One way or another, it's going to come. Maybe they can't find the plane. That's a possibility. There's so many possibilities out there. Maybe they can't find it. And I'd be satisfied with somebody, for once, trying to try to locate the plane. It's 75 years later. It may not be there. It may be there. Till somebody looks, nobody's going to know. I'm going to make sure somebody looks. And if they can't find it, then I'll be satisfied that we ran the best mission that we could. We made the attempt. And if it can't be done, then so be it. But if they can find it, that's our ultimate dream. It's a hard weight. It's a really hard thing to have inside you, and you can't get to the end of it. As much as I love what we've done, there's sometimes I hate this too. It's just a lot.
What keeps you at it? What keeps you going with it?
So I have no other options. My dad taught me when I was 9 years old. My father gave me some mission in the backyard, pull weeds or something like that. I think I came in and it was just too hard, and I told my dad that I can't do it. And I still remember what my dad told me. He said, "I don't understand the word can't. It just tells me you haven't tried hard enough yet."
Well, I know how hard you've been trying on this, and you said something a minute ago, about talking to 8 of the other 11 families who lost loved ones on that plane. I'm sure there are some people listening out there right now who are saying, "Now, I had a great grandfather. I had a
an uncle, a grandpa, who never came home from the war, and I'm going to try to find out more about him now that this is on my mind. What are some of the most important things you learned through this process that you think might be helpful for others who have a similar quest now?
Oh, wow. There's so many resources out there. Fold 3 is a great way to start. Fold 3 has gone into the National Archives and digitized and scanned a lot of records. And they also have the ability. It's a paid service. But if you do go on Memorial Day, they do have a free weekend of it. And you can go on and you can type in keywords and it can pick it up out of the scanned text. So if you know things like squadron numbers and things like that, you can start to, bureau numbers of planes. Mm-hmm. You can scan the records. That's originally how this was found. There's also the National Archive, but, you've got one in Maryland, one in St. Louis. So it's quite expensive to have someone go look for all this. So if you can do the legwork yourself and run down the location. One word of advice with NARA Maryland, don't accept the word no. They told me no for months. We don't have this. We can't find it. They went on and on and on. And I just continued to send them emails. Don't tell me can't. And once we got the report off of Fold 3, we proved that it exists. And I sent it to the National Archive. And then they went and found it.
How about that?
Yeah.
Have you thought about just trying to fly over to Indonesia yourself?
Yeah. it's difficult. I work full time, but yeah, I've been saving vacation for a while. This whole COVID thing really threw a big monkey wrench into that dream, especially flying into some of these countries. You have to endure a 2-week quarantine, which I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to get 2 weeks off of work. So I don't know how that's going to work out. I'm also not a very good swimmer and I don't like the ocean much. So keep thinking about it, but I'll keep working on that one. I have a thing worked out with sharks. I don't go where they live, and they don't come in my neighborhood. And it's worked out great for 46 years, so I don't know if I want to violate that.
How convinced, how sure are you that the plane is in that four-acre box?
I can prove that that's where the plane went down. With 100% accuracy, I know where the plane crashed. I can't guarantee that it's there. I hope it's there. If it's still there, it's right around in there. It's not a very big area. It can be searched with, side scan sonar. I think it could be located if it's there. But there's so many things that can happen in 75 years. Mm-hmm. Could have been snagged by a fishing trawler. It could have got dredged when they dredged in the area for the harbor. There's just so many things that could have happened. Or it's sitting there waiting to be discovered. It could be covered in silt. I don't know. All I know is that the search that was performed for my uncle's crew in right after the war was not enough. They drove a Jeep down to the southwestern tip of Singapore and asked people if they remember this plane going down. It was reported 8 miles out in the ocean. Nobody did. And then it was ruled that the plane was lost at sea, unrecoverable, and it was no longer looked for. I think it was 1947. That's in the IDPF file.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was given up on so long ago. I just do not feel that a real big effort was made. But there were technological problems there. But also in the IDPF file, they don't ever mention the recon photos. There are some stunning photos of this plane going down and where it crashed. And I don't see any mention of it in the IDPF file. Why didn't they have that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't have Google Earth back then, but they had airplanes. They could have flown around and had the picture and look for the island. They had a lot of men to look for. I do understand and recognize that. Yeah. I don't know the exact number, but I know it was over 100,000. They found a lot and brought them home, but they're still finding and bringing these men home. I just want to make sure that they aren't forgotten and somebody does try before I have to go get scuba certified and do it myself. It's been discussed in the O'Kane family repeatedly. So we're hoping we don't have to go to that length. But if that's what it takes, we're game. But I believe, DPA, this is an important mission for them. I do believe they are trying. I just hope that the government of Indonesia will recognize that mission and allow them in. And not just for my uncle's crew, but for all the men. My gosh, I look at, World War II, 72,555. I know it fluctuates and the number changes, but that is a lot of people. And that's just World War II. You've got Korea and the problems with getting soldiers out of that area. And Vietnam, which actually the Vietnamese have been very helpful with DPAA. A lot of their operations are in Vietnam because they are so amicable with DPAA. And the last I heard, DPA was actually training Vietnamese crews, because they don't just find our soldiers.
Right.
They find theirs as well. And mm-hmm. so they're really supportive of this mission. And so they do a lot of operations there. It's just the area that our plane is in, there's just nobody looking there. There's nobody over there. We didn't have any big battles. We didn't fight in Singapore. And there was no way anybody was getting to this.
But someday that could change, and don't we hope it does. It's time for another break, but we'll get to the rest of the O'Kane family story when we come back. We'll also hear some of the memories of the man who helped unlock so many mysteries for them. This Memorial Day edition of Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.
When life throws you curveballs, you have to be adaptable, or at least have a good pinch hitter on the bench who knows how to handle a curve. When it comes to your business, Provident Payments is the best teammate you could ever have. Perhaps it helps that many of the leaders for one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America are former ballplayers. Contactless payments, online ordering, point of sale, you name it, Provident Payments knows it. Now, you could get some of these services from one of the big banking companies, but you're never going to get the kind of personalized service that Provident Payments delivers every day. 24/7 solution-based tech support. When your ability to process payments goes haywire in any way, time is money. So would you rather wait on hold for who knows how long, or would you like to have a direct line you can call for immediate help? That's where a good teammate comes in. Learn more about bringing Provident Payments onto your team at providentpayments.com. They really are one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. That website again, providentpayments.com.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Memorial Day edition of the program. Make Memorial Day count this year. If you don't know a Gold Star family, find one and make sure they know how much you appreciate their sacrifice. We've been hearing from Jeff O'Kane about the mission to learn more about his great uncle who was killed in World War II, and Jeff's aspirations to maybe someday bring his uncle's remains home. He mentioned that connecting with another man from his uncle's final mission helped unlock many of the mysteries that had lingered for decades. That man is Vic Walters, who shared his story last week on Hometown Heroes. You can link to that complete interview at hometownheroesradio.com, but I want you to hear about 5 minutes worth from Vic right now, what he remembered about that fateful day, June 1st, 1945.
On June 1st, 1945, the day before, I was the plane captain. I was a second-class aviation machinist mate, and I wasn't the most senior. We had a radioman who was a first class. But anyway, at 3:30 in the afternoon, they came up and told me, said, "Hey, tell your crew to try to get some sleep because you're going to take off at midnight and you're going to Singapore. And the other plane is going to Singapore with you. And you'll meet up over Singapore at daybreak in the morning. And he's going to take pictures of all the Japanese planes and so forth.
This is a reconnaissance mission?
Sort of, yeah. He was going to take pictures of all the planes around Singapore. So we go up the coast, maybe 15 miles or so, and there's a whole bunch of planes taking off. I remember there was four of them taking off side by side. And, you know, maybe we're doing 200 miles an hour. All of a sudden, one of them goes zoom, just like that. I could see him going up ahead of us, and he went up ahead of us, and then he turned around and came back. And when he came back, he was firing. Now, remember, he was firing out of his left wing and his right wing and firing at us. And I thought, you know, we've got more guns than he does. We're going to shoot him down. But I was wrong, because he came right in between the two of us, and he hit the other plane and the number three engine, and boy, right away the plane's on fire. But anyway, after a while, they shut the engine off, so effectively he's flying on one and two engine, and number three's completely out, and number four, every time they turned the engine on, it caught fire. The plane was going steadily down all the time, and we stayed with him.
Which is dangerous, because you're making yourselves vulnerable, too.
Yeah.
To stay with that crippled B-24, but you're giving them some protection?
Sort of, yeah. And then this plane, the Japanese, what they would do is they would come in from the port side and attack below. They'd come up from below and then shoot you down. And they had two planes, two guns shooting at you, and you only have one shooting at them. So the guy's coming in at me, and I could see that he was coming in. So I had the plane. I was shooting a little bit high at him. So it ends up he's coming in from the left-hand side down below, and I'm shooting at him before he's shooting at me. So he's coming in, and I'm shooting kind of high. But eventually, he wasn't shooting at me anymore, so I may have shot him down.
And the only reason you don't know whether or not you shot him down is all of a sudden that plane was gone.
Yes.
And you couldn't find it anywhere.
I didn't know.
So you couldn't confirm the shoot down because you couldn't see him on fire or going down.
No.
What happened to the other B-24 you guys have been flying with?
We're following him along. But see, he's flying on one and two engines, and he's going steadily down all the time. So finally, we get farther out, and I saw this other plane hit the water. And I told the pilot, the other plane just hit the water upside down.
Those, of course, would be the final fateful moments for Buren O'Kane and 11 others aboard that aircraft. Let's return now to Buren's great-nephew, Jeff O'Kane.
Sounds like you're hopeful that within the next year there could be some significant developments.
Yeah, that's what I hoped last year, too.
Well, that's my question. How long are you going to keep at it?
To the day that I die, I'm never going to give up on this. It has to be completed. I think it's terrible that families like ours have to go to these great lengths to accomplish something like this. But if they want to fight, I'm going to bring it to them. This is going to be done, and I hope they can do it in the next couple of years. I don't want to be doing this for 10 years or 15 years, but if that's what it takes. I think about this every day. Mm. There's not a day that goes by that I can't escape it. I've got to find a way to make it happen.
Well, I was going to ask you about what Memorial Day is like for your family, but it kind of sounds like every day is Memorial Day for you.
It has been since 2018. It was incredible to find all this, but it's maddening, too, to know this much and then to not be able to do anything about it. And, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm not an ambassador. I just want my uncle to come home. I want all the guys on the plane to come home. I think they deserve the effort of a search. And if they are able to locate that plane to make an effort to find the remains, there's 12 men aboard, and they've proven before they've been able to find remains that are DNA viable and be able to be checked back to the families. I mean, that's my hope and goal. If it can be found, recover the remains. Maybe they don't find my uncle. Maybe they find, you know, one of the other family members. I'd be satisfied with that. Just something that's unfinished in my family and it needs to be done.
And I just want to be clear on this so no one misunderstands. If you hadn't found those photos and figured out that island and where it was, nobody else would be trying to find this plane right now.
No, sir. Since 1947, they have been classified as lost at sea and recoverable. Not to knock DPAA, they've got a huge mission of trying to find these men. There was just nobody looking. So it was amazing the fact that we were able to find it. But that is one of the things that we were able to change. DPA now has this crew listed as active pursuit. And so that was a very big thing that changed in 2019.
What's the biggest thing you've learned through this journey? The most important thing maybe that you've learned through this quest?
Never accept no for an answer. We've had some roadblocks, and I'm not going to go into them in great detail, but they were always approached with, that answer is not acceptable. And when people didn't want to hear me, we went above them. We went around them. We went to people higher up. We went to congressmen. We went to Congress. We wrote letters to everyone we could until people finally listened to what we had to say. Yeah, never accept no for an answer.
Have you ever wondered what Buren would think about all this?
I think he would be proud that 75 years after he died, that his family members continue to keep up the hope and to continue to push for his recovery. I think he would be proud. I hope that he would be. I think my grandfather, I wish he was alive to see this, because my grandfather would have loved this.
And I, you know, master the obvious here, it appears you're pretty proud of Buren's legacy and your family's legacy of service.
Oh, yeah, definitely. My great-grandfather was in the Army in World War I. His four sons, Clyde and Buren, were World War II. And then my grandfather and great-uncle Don were in Korea. And then my uncle David O'Kane was in the Navy in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I never served myself, but my grandfather wasn't real big after he got out. There's some things that went on. He just kind of... Yeah, really started to really push against joining the military.
Sure. Well, and if there's anything else you want to add about, you know, what you've experienced and what you think may be relevant for others, feel free. But how should we remember Buren and the other 11 guys on that plane? How would you describe their significance or the significance of their sacrifice?
I don't know. They were like a lot of other... I mean, there were boys and young men that went over to fight a war to save the whole world. They're just like many. It's a story that's, you know, probably shared in a lot of families. The men that went over and did what they had to do to free the world.
Is there anything else I didn't ask you about that is important to you to share?
Being able to track down the gunners. That was something we found in our family searching for the 11 other families. That we were able to actually meet and speak with two of the gunners that were on Lieutenant Heiler's plane in 2018, Victor Walters and Edward Saruba, who passed here recently in January of 2021. But to be able to meet these men in 2018 and film their stories and talk to them about this day, they were there, and it was really amazing to be able to meet them and hear their story firsthand.
If there's somebody out there listening who is saying, you know, maybe I will start to dig a little bit, what encouragement would you have for them? Why should they try?
Well, that's up to them. I mean, that's their personal thing. It's amazing to find what records are out there. I mean, you need to be able to read a lot. I've read thousands and thousands of pages. But knowing the history of other family members, I mean, that's a personal thing. It's very big in my family. His name has never been forgotten. His story has been passed on for multiple generations. And if it's something that's important to you and your family, the answers are out there. It's going to be a lot of work and a lot of reading and things like that. But if it's something that interests you, start with Fold 3 and start looking through that. If you can narrow things down, there are researchers that work in NARA, Maryland, that you can contact, and it's not cheap. There are some really good ones out there, and Westmoreland Research is who we used, and he was great. But you know, we already had the location of the files. We just needed him to scan them, and he did an unbelievable job of scanning these photos. And good luck.
One more thing. I saw that sticker over there on the fridge. Freedom is not free.
No. No, it was paid with a very heavy price and continues to be.
What do you think about when you see that slogan, that catchphrase?
Well, I instantly think of my uncle and the price our family paid and so many other families that paid the ultimate price. I'm just very thankful that people like that existed. They call them the greatest generation for a reason. They're just amazing people. And I'm very thankful for what they've done for this entire country and our freedom.
There is no better way to say it than that. Jeff O'Kane, hoping beyond hope to someday find his great uncle's plane and bring those heroes back home. If you'd like to follow the progress of that quest, Jeff has created a Facebook page through which he updates developments, and I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. That's all the time we have on Hometown Heroes today, but thank you so much for listening, and thanks again to Jeff O'Kane for taking us inside his family's emotional journey. I'm Paul Leffler, and I'm going to say it again. May we never forget that on Memorial Day and every day, freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.